Welcome to episode 137 of the Fredcast Cycling Podcast for October 5th, 2009. My name is David, and I'm a Fred. Welcome to the first post-Interbike 2009 audio episode of the Fredcast Cycling Podcast. Lots of content to share with you tonight, including our feature interview with Gary Fisher, direct from Interbike. But before we get to that, we've also got interviews with our Interbike TV crew, including Marcus Neuert from Cycle Film, professional cycling photographer Brian Hodes, cycling artist Kathleen King, and of course, PodSafe cycling music. So sit back, relax, and if you're riding your bike, hammer just a little bit harder, because here comes the Fredcast. Hey, fellow Freds, welcome back to the Fredcast Cycling Podcast. Great to be with you and behind the microphone without the makeup and the hair and everything else that we had doing Interbike TV for this year. It was a lot of fun, and I'll talk a little bit about that in a second. But first, I want to let you know that tonight's episode of the Fredcast is brought to you by Action Wipes. We've talked about Action Wipes here on the show before and glad to have them here as a sponsor. And by the way, per the Federal Trade Commission's new requirements, I have to tell you that when I first reviewed Action Wipes, I did get them for free, but I got to tell you, I'd pay for them. I like them so much, and that's why they've come on board as a sponsor of the Fredcast. You know, when you are out for a ride and you go, let's say you do a century, everyone recommends that as soon as you're done with your ride, get out of those filthy shorts that you were riding in, wash up, get on some regular clothes, and that's the best way to ensure that you don't get irritated, that you don't get saddle sores. But sometimes that's hard to do because you don't have the opportunity after a century to take a shower because you got to get in your car and drive home. Perhaps you could be an hour or more from home. That's where Action Wipes come in. Most people before Action Wipes would use baby wipes. Now, baby wipes are not good for your face. They're not made for cyclists. They don't help make you smell better the way Action Wipes do. And like I said, even if Action Wipes wasn't a sponsor, I would be a paying customer. And I encourage you to be as well. Simply go to actionwipes.com. And if you put in the special promo code FREDCAST at checkout, you'll get 15% off your order. That's actionwipes.com. And we thank them so much for their support of the Fredcast. Well, let's get right into tonight's show, and it's great to be back with you after, wow, a very long week plus at Interbike this year. And as I said, I am still in show recovery mode, so no news tonight, just a couple of interviews that I think you're going to find very interesting, and then, as I said, some PodSafe cycling music as always. So what were we doing at Interbike, and what was it that took so much time and energy? Well, we were filming Interbike TV's Live from the Show segments, and what that meant was we had incredible access to some of the best and brightest companies at Interbike this year, going directly into their booths, in some cases before or after hours when no one was on the show floor, getting some access that very few others got. I'll give you a great example. When we went and we did the segments with Specialized, we did that before the show started. And what was really interesting, if those of you who are following my tweets know, there were signs all over that booth saying no photography, but we had exclusive access and were able to bring you some really great information. So we had the opportunity to go out and see some of the latest, greatest products from Interbike and bring them to you in video form. In years past, I've only brought it to you in audio, but nothing is able to beat being able to bring you the audio interviews and the video. And we had some great members of our team this year. And so tonight, I'm going to be bringing you interviews with some of the members of that team. Now, for those of you who don't know, you can watch these videos on my website. Just go to interbiketv.thefredcast.com. That's interbiketv.thefredcast.com. And as of right now, you're only going to get a sampling of what we shot, because we shot more than 60 companies. And at many of those companies, we shot more than one video, sometimes three, four, or even more segments from each of those companies. So with just a handful of videos online right now, there's a lot more to come. So keep watching that website. And of course, I'll be Twittering when I release those as well. So follow me at twitter.com/Fredcast to find out when we're releasing new videos. We shot more than 10 hours of video. And as a result, that's the reason why we're behind, because the heavy lifting, now that the show is over, falls on the shoulders of my friend and colleague Marcus Neuert from Cycle Film. Now, I had the opportunity to catch up with Marcus and get some information, some sort of behind-the-scenes profile info about Marcus, because I admire him and what he does, and I thought you would be interested in hearing a little more about the man behind Cycle Film and the man behind Interbike TV. So here's my interview with my friend and colleague, Marcus Neuert from Cycle Film. One of the key members of the Interbike TV team this year is Marcus Neuert from Cycle Film. Marcus is sitting here in front of his computer, busily editing while I'm talking to him. But Marcus, tell me, how did you get into filmmaking?
Wow. I'll give you the short story. No, I always liked film and movies, and always thought it'd be cool to do my own film, but I never really had the, the conviction to go for it. I didn't know how it works. So I just went with a standard business degree and went my career path, you know, along that line. But then, 4 years into my business job, I was doing finance, I thought there must be more to life than that. And I thought back, okay, what do I like? What did I like when I was a kid? And I said, I like, doing sports outdoors and that kind of stuff, and watching films. And I just spent a few months just mulling over that, and suddenly I came up with the idea it'd be good to launch like an outdoor sports film company. And did a few smaller assignments and just kind of settled into the cycling groove. And that was 2004, 2005. And then quit my job and just said, okay, I'll try it full time for a year, see if it works. If it doesn't, I can always go back and be a financial analyst. and I guess now we're 5 years down, 4 years down the line, I'm still here. So I guess it's working. It's fun. Yeah.
And the way that you and I sort of met was you do these great preview videos for the ETAP every year. Tell everybody about that.
The ETAP, I was riding the ETAP in 2006 myself. It was the stage from Gap to Alpe d'Huez, and it was just a dream stage, doing in an almost competitive environment. Riding up Alpe d'Huez was one of my greatest cycling experiences. And then I thought, well, I got to ride it again next year, or at least ride some other events in that region. So I thought it'd be good to go out and preview some of these events myself. But I didn't have the time. I was busy. Yeah, working, getting Cycle Film up and running, and I looked online on YouTube. I was checking out videos to see if I can preview something online, where to go, where it's good. And there was nothing out there, and if there was anything, it was really handheld stuff, just fun videos that people post. And I thought, I can do this better. I thought, okay, let's call some people, see if we can get some funding or some support to go out there. And I ended up with Mike Cotty from Cannondale, who was very excited. He said, he wrote the same event I did, and we kind of got talking. We said, let's just go out and do it, very low key, low budget. And so him and myself went out, the week after they announced the 2007 ETAP de Tour stage. It was in the Pyrenees, and we kind of went out for a couple of days, filmed that event, put the DVD together. I just put it up on my Cycle Film shop page, and it started selling much better than all the other DVDs. And then, I knew I discovered a new genre.
Also, I remember this year at the Tour of California, you were really running around crazy doing lots of different projects. Tell me about some of the projects that you were doing there and some that developed as a result of your trip to the Tour of California.
Well, to go to the Tour of California started actually a few months back. I was filming at the Tour of Britain. And I had so much fun just doing the behind-the-scenes stuff for them. And I thought, okay, I got to do this again. What's the next big event on the calendar? And it was the Tour of California in February. Booked my tickets and just kind of pitched the idea to the organization. They said, well, I'm not sure, but we can have a press pass. You can kind of have a free hand and run around behind the scenes and do some stuff. And it was fun, and I just met a lot of people, and I think got into, you know, the American market a lot more. I think my web page traffic picked up a lot after the tour of California. And I ran into Liz Kreutz, for example. She's Lance Armstrong's personal photographer for his comeback year. And we did some short little video clips on her, just how she gets her stuff together in the morning, how she follows Lance around, and the whole cycling circus that is. And people liked it. And then from then on, I just talked to her some more. I said, why don't we put something bigger together, like a long-term documentary following you, your life as a female pro photographer in the cycling world. And small little projects like this came out of that. And I guess you and I met as well. And, you know, it's just good. If you have a small company, the thing to do is just go out and show yourself. You know, I always think of it, if you want to go out, you know, want to meet somebody, you know, if you want to go out on a date, you can't just sit at home and you know, watch the newspaper or something, watch the television. You got to go out to, who knows, go shopping, go to the clubs, meet people. And the same in business. You got to promote yourself. You got to go to the pro events, go to the trade shows, go to the smaller events, go to private events, you know, whatever there is in the cycling world or in any world that you are in, you know, just go out and find your customers and find your people.
What's your favorite event, trade show, or personality that you've covered?
Favorite event? I had a lot of fun at the Tour of California just because it was so loose and relaxed compared, let's say, to the Tour de France. Mm-hmm. Which is, it's such a huge event, and your hands are almost tied behind the back, and your feet are tied, but you can't go anywhere without being yelled at or, you know, fined or thrown off anything. It's difficult. So that's why I had a lot of fun at the Tour of California. It still feels like it's a big event, but it has a small time, small kind of personal feel to it. So that was a great event. I hope I get to go again next year. Personalities. You smiling at me, I guess you're...
No, don't say me. Don't even think about it.
Not you. Well, no, I was going to mention you in the second place, you know. I think the first place, I think what you're referring to is probably the Podium Girls that had a big showing at the Tour of California videos. And people keep asking me I need to do more Podium Girl videos from other events, so I guess...
You would hate that, right?
It's awful, yeah. I'd much rather film you.
Yeah. See, now we know how sarcastic he is.
Yeah, well, that's it. That's it's fun.
What was your first bike, and what do you currently ride?
Oh, my first bike, I don't know. It was probably some off the shelf from a supermarket, you know, in Germany. Just needed a bike to get to school and back. I don't even know the brand. It had the shifters on the down tube, you know, and real Eddie Merckx style. And I had it was like a road. It had road bars, like drop handlebars, but they had a rack as well, and you put your stuff on the back. But I never thought of using it as like a competitive machine. It was just like an A to B kind of thing. And then I got off the bike for when I was in college, and never thought of biking. And then, you know, got into mountain biking. My first proper mountain bike was a K2, believe it or not. I know of them as making like ski shoes, yeah. But they had a special. I was in Switzerland at the time. They had a special, and it was like 500 Swiss francs. I just wanted a bike. It looked good, and I bought it. And 6 months later, it was stolen. Yeah. Went back and bought a Scott MX-40, I think. That was nice. That was stolen as well. And
don't take your bike to Germany.
No, or Switzerland.
Or Switzerland.
Exactly. And then my current bike, I ride a Fusion, which is a German brand, in my local shop in Germany. I try to kind of support local businesses. Yes, I bought a bike there. And my road bike at the moment is a Cannondale. Obviously, with my Cannondale connection, and thanks to Mike Cotty for hooking me up with a sweet green machine, Synapse. So that's, it's a great bike.
And where do you park that so I can steal it?
I wouldn't tell you.
Unfortunately, you've been in this meeting room for most of Interbike, editing videos and doing a great job. But is there something that you've seen here at the show that really caught your eye, other than Podium Girls?
Yeah, no, there's a distinct lack of Podium Girls. That's true. I need to have more. But I didn't spend that much time on the floor this year. Last year, I spent all the time in the seminars. So I regret not going to the seminars this year. On the show floor itself, I've heard of a small kids' bike where they can practice how to ride. I've not even seen it, but I thought that's a great idea. Okay. And yeah, that's the other thing. I'm hoping everything I missed you will have covered, and I'll get to it soon. And then I form my opinion what I like best.
Marcus, tell everybody where they can find you on the web.
The obvious place is cyclefilm.com. I also have a big YouTube presence. So if you log on to youtube.com/cyclefilm, I think I've got 150 videos up there. All my back catalog videos, the preview videos, it's all checked through the playlists. That's, I guess, and then vimeo.com if there's some bit of better quality video players, if you want to embed them in your blogs and that kind of stuff. So,
and of course on Twitter as?
Twitter as Cyclefilm. Yeah.
Marcus, thanks for the great work this week, and thanks for being on the Fredcast.
It's my pleasure. Thanks.
Well, another member of our Innerbike TV team is someone that you may know on Twitter as Velo Images. I know him as Brian Hodes. He's an incredible cycling photographer, but there's a lot more depth to the man. A lot that I learned over the week, and I thought I would interview him so that you could learn a little bit more about the man behind the lens.
One of the team members I've been working here at Innerbike at Innerbike TV is Brian Hodes. Brian, known on Twitter as Velo Images, and the name of his company as well. Brian, tell me what your day-to-day job is.
My, here at Innerbike?
Yeah, day-to-day.
Day-to-day? I'm a photographer. I've been a photographer since I was 16. Recently got into the cycling world as an avid cyclist, and been doing photography forever.
How did you get your start in photography?
Well, I wasn't the world's best student. And I quit school in 10th grade to pursue shooting. My first actual shot, I was living in Israel at the time, and there was a terrorist attack. And I was the only photographer there at the time of this particular terrorist attack. And they blew up a bus, and I have the only image of the bus. I actually shot it. My shutter went down as it blew up. And I actually sold the images to a press company called Gamma Leçon for $120. I was 16. And it was all over the world with somebody else's name. So I learned my lesson really young, real quick.
Okay, that's a pretty powerful experience as a photographer and as your first professional image that you sell.
Being in Israel, we live with terrorism on a day-to-day basis. You never realize you're going to be in one until it happens. This particular attack, they hijacked a bus from a kibbutz up north and were trying to drive it into Tel Aviv. And I lived about 10 kilometers outside of Tel Aviv, and it was all live on the radio. So I ran up to the highway and hitched a ride with some guy. And we were the actually first car behind the bus when it finally was the wheels were shot at, and they pulled out. And then the terrorists were out in the back of the bus shooting towards us. And we ducked, and like I said, just as we shot the image, the bus blew up.
From there, yeah, which is a pretty powerful thing, from there, you were telling me the other day about some other photography you were doing in Israel, sort of more official.
Absolutely. Well, that was like 10th grade and up, and for the next couple of years, I did a lot of entertainment photography in Israel. And then at 18, I had a choice to come back to the States and pursue my photography career. I had a scholarship to a particular school. And I decided to volunteer for the Israeli service, Israeli Air Force, in fact. And I did aerial recon search and rescue in the Israeli Air Force.
Okay, now you're just sort of not embellishing here. What kind of an airplane were you flying in?
Well, I flew in a lot of different types of planes, anywhere from helicopters to C-130s. But my favorite was backseating the F-16 and Phantom F-4s.
Tell me about the timing in Israel. Peacetime? Wartime?
Well, the beginning of the first 2 years, we did have peacetime. And then in 1982, the war happened. And my unit actually was one of the units on the outskirts. If you recall back then, Israel went into Iran to bomb the nuclear reactor. We were on the outskirts of the borders as a search and rescue unit. And then all of southern Lebanon went on.
So moving from that, when did you first become a cyclist?
I cycled in my teens in Israel and then stopped and then just didn't cycle for a number of years. And approximately 10, 12 years ago, rekindled my love with cycling and It's been on ever since. And I got involved with cycling really more for charity than anything else. AIDS Life Cycle got me involved, and I do a lot of HIV/AIDS work and fundraising.
And we were just looking at a DVD, as a matter of fact, speaking of that. I know that you do the AIDS Life Cycle. You do the Ride Down California. But we were looking at a DVD where you did something pretty amazing. Tell everybody about that.
Well, every World AIDS Day, we're in our 29th year of the pandemic. I do a World AIDS Day ride. Last year, we had approximately 22 cities around the world simultaneously at 8 o'clock in the morning ride 28 miles. This year, coming up on December 1st, it's going to be 29 miles, although the ride we're doing the Sunday before, November 29th, it's a little safer for cyclists, to raise the awareness of the HIV/AIDS pandemic. What I chose to do last year was get some students involved. So I approached the school at Beverly Hills High School and asked them if we could possibly do something with the kids to get them educated and, you know, let them know more about HIV and AIDS and how you get it, what can be done. And it was all go from there. We got the kids out on the tarmac, but 6 o'clock p.m. on December 1st, I rode a 24-hour bike ride around the football field, around the track at Beverly Hills High School. Ended up with 205.36 miles. Mm-hmm. And during the day, we had a large assembly with the kids. They came out and asked questions. I had two HIV-positive cyclists come out and talk about AIDS. We educated them.
So on the melding of photography and cycling, how did you sort of decide to specialize in that?
Well, I volunteer my services to various charitable organizations as a photographer for their particular events. And I just decided, you know something, this is my passion, and I'm okay at it. And just chose to dive right on in and got a lot of connections with some of the pro teams and followed them, and it's been a good year.
What's your best memory or even your favorite image from your cycling photography work?
One of my favorite images happened to come on the first stage of this past year's Tour of California when Monsebo won. It was pouring rain. It was a nightmare to shoot, but he had finished and he was, you know, reaching out in celebration. And I happened to have caught, and this was a fluke, I happened to have caught somebody else's flash, and it was side lit on Monsebo, and it just happens to be one of my favorite images.
And of course, people can find that on your website.
They can at veloimages.com.
And what have been some of the things that have stood out for you here this week at 2009 Interbike?
Some of the things that I've seen, I love the new Castelli bib shorts. You know, I can't say enough about them. The body paint, I mean, fits great. I still have yet to ride them, but I was even tempting to use them as pajamas. They feel so good. Those are really cool. There are some great products upstairs that I've seen, some nutritional products. One particular company is a company that you can custom make your own nutritional drinks and taste and all the vitamins and nutritional supplements, and you can customize them. One of the other, the new GoPro HD camera.
Yeah, that really has got a lot of buzz. Yeah.
It's mind-boggling. I've been using GoPros for quite some time now. Love them to death. This is coming out right now, and the quality is unbelievable.
You know, it's funny that two of those people that you mentioned are companies that we did in the videos. People are going to think we got sponsorship for them, but the fact of the matter is we videoed and we've been buzzing about just the products that everybody's interested in.
You know, it really, I mean, there's a lot, let's call it, there's a lot of products up there. There's a lot of products that are similar, but there are a few that just stand out. They've gone the extra mile. They've gone the extra investment on research and promotion, and they really do stand out.
Yeah. Lastly, what was your first bike, and what are you riding now?
My first bike years ago was a Peugeot that my father brought to me. I was living in Israel. It must have been about a $200 or $300 bike at the time. And I've gone through quite a few bikes. What I ride right now is an Eddy Merckx AXM 25th Anniversary Edition. 100 of them were made. I have Flashpoint wheels made by Zip. Love them. Flashpoint 60s. And last year, I was extremely fortunate to have Eddie sign the bike. And, yeah, he's a good guy.
Great. And of course, you did your first cross race here, didn't you?
Oh, you were going to.
You knew I was going to ask.
Okay. I have always taught my children, try if you're thinking about something, try it. You could always say you didn't like it. I did my first cross racer. Never crossed before. And it was an experience. It was quite the experience. And I'll do it again.
That was my question, because you say, you know, if you try it, you don't like it, but you'll do it again.
I'm going to do it again, even though I was not successful on this particular race. I ended up hitting a branch off of a tree. Ooh. But it was an experience, and I loved it. And it's hard. I my hat's off to some of these cyclocross racers.
Brian, tell everybody one more time where they can find your images.
Images can be found at www.veloimages.com.
And your Twitter name?
At Velo Images.
Brian, it's been great working with you this week. Have a safe trip home.
Thank you. You do the same, David. It's been an awesome adventure. Looking forward to next year.
And finally, although not a member officially of our Interbike TV crew, was Kathleen King. Kathleen is, well, I'll let her tell you about it, but she's an artist that has cycling in her art. Here's my interview with Kathleen King.
One of the things that you might not think of when you think of bikes is art. Bikes and art, do they go together? Now, a lot of bikes you might think of as art, but somebody who does bicycle art is Kathleen King. Kathleen is here with me at Interbike, and I'm looking at some wearable art, which we're going to get back to. But first, tell me what it means to be a cycling artist.
Well, first of all, you have to have a passion for cycling. So much so that you can't help painting about it, which is what finally happened to me. I've been a professional artist for 25 years, and just in the last 3 years, I finally started making cycling art. It just sort of came to me, and I tell people that it, you know, rolled around in my heart for a while, finally made it up to my brain, and then bounced back down my right arm, and suddenly there's bike art, and it took the form of action painting, which I think is appropriate.
Now, we're not talking about art about cycling. It's cycling art. So you are a cyclist yourself?
Yes, absolutely.
When did you start cycling?
I fell in love with riding bicycles when I was 4 years old. And it's one of my most vivid memories of my mother and father standing in our driveway a certain length apart, and I had a purple bike, and my dad just decided we're going to take the training wheels off today, and you're going to, you know, go. I think it was the day after my fourth birthday, and because I'd gotten this bike for my birthday, so they stood about two bike lengths apart, put me on the bike, and I would ride from one to the other, and they turned me around, and they kept getting farther and farther apart, and then finally they felt, well, you know, I've got it down, and I did one circle around the driveway and went down the hill, and I was gone for hours.
Were you, and maybe you don't remember when you were 4 years old, but were you a cyclist first, or were you an artist first?
Well, come to think of it, I have the crayon drawings from when I was five, so I guess the cycling came first.
Interesting. And how did you, well, tell me a little bit about your art training.
I'm largely self-taught. I tried to go to school for it several times, and I just found it very restrictive. And by the time I actually got into an art school, university, I was getting projects. So I elected to go and take the jobs instead of go into massive amounts of debt.
What types of media do you work in?
Acrylic paint, primarily. I also like to do pastels, but that's more for renderings and drawings. I work in colored pencil first, usually, for my sketches. And then always go to canvas and paint. And all of the illustrations that end up on the shirts and books and so forth start out as paintings.
And when you do paintings, I mean, obviously the general subject is cycling, but is there a specific subject that you like to paint?
In cycling? Gosh, no, just mostly I'm painting the movement. I'm painting the feeling of it. It's about the energy, and all of the work looks fast. You can see the movement that someone is going somewhere.
And it's interesting. So laid on the table in front of us, it's hard for you to see, but there's three T-shirts. And on these T-shirts are some of Kathleen's art. And it's exactly what I see. I see speed. I see movement. And while it is, and forgive me, I'm not an art person. For me, it's a bit abstract, but I see myself here.
Well, that's kind of the point, is that I have done specific scribbles, as we may talk about later. But that's it. It's not a specific type of bike. Some of them are broken down into being, I have done a sketch of a commuter, an urban cyclist, and then a racer. So there are those divisions. But I'm trying to evoke the feeling of cycling. So, of course, anyone who loves the sport can see themselves in one of these bike scribbles.
Now, these are, as you, to use your term, I said abstract, you said scribbles. But I've also seen the photos of a very large mural that you recently did in Colorado. Tell me about that project.
That was a project commissioned by Chris Carmichael, who most people may know him as Lance Armstrong's coach. He was the first person who told Lance that he would win the tour. And he was opening a new training facility in Colorado Springs, and he moved into a historic building. And the fun part of this is that he actually found me on Twitter, of all things. I got a direct message from him one night asking if I did any kind of cycling art. And he wanted to do a large mural about all of the history of the Tour de France in his lobby. And it's a 13 by 7 foot 11 inch, that's very significant, mural. And it includes a grand peloton of scribbles, and each one is the profile of a tour winner. So if you know that and you're looking at them, you can identify each person.
Yeah, and I mean, I know Lance is in there, and there's several other famous cyclists in there. And then, if I remember right, along the bottom, I mean, it almost looks like a tableau of France.
Yes, I tried to represent every region of France, and when I first was doing the research, I took it upon myself to go and find every town that had hosted a start or finish of a stage of the tour, and of course, it's up in the thousands, and so it was impossible to try and represent every town, so I had to go for regions.
What's next on your project list? Or if there isn't something specific, what's that one dream project you'd like to do?
Well, the one dream project that I'm actually brewing right now is has the abstraction as part of it, but it's a portrait project of the champions of our sport. So I wanted to have that sort of artistic record, because right now there's really no one that's doing that kind of serious portraiture, making that a point to document our champions in that way.
Interesting idea. We talked a little about the scribbles on the T-shirt. Where else can we find the scribbles? What else do you do with them?
Well, I had the honor of doing the illustrations for Carlton Reed's Bike to Work book. So I'm hoping some of those projects I've been talking with people about that will gel in the near future, looking to do some editorial illustration for magazines. And then kind of expand the project, the products with the shirts and mugs and things like that, because something that I noticed after I started just putting the scribbles on the shirts was that there's really not a lot of giftware, so to say, for the cycling enthusiast. And the people who love cycling enthusiasts, my friends included especially, will say, we wanted to buy something cycling for you, but we couldn't find anything. So you walk into a store and there's stuff for golfers and baseball enthusiasts, but really cycling, there's not a lot. So I'd like to see more of that, and I'd like to see more cycling artists come out of the woodwork and put their stuff on, you know, calendars.
Of course, I saw a few bikes upstairs that somebody could buy me if they wanted to find me a present. Where can people find your art if they want to look at it or if they want to buy some of the giftware like you talked about?
I have a website and a blog, and often I think that the blog is the best place, but the website is surfeitofpassion.com, And the blog is surfeitofpassion.blogspot.com. And for people who don't know, it's usually a difficult word. It's surfeit, S-U-R-F as in Frank, E-I-T.
Where'd the name come from, since you brought it up?
Ah, okay. The name Surfeit of Passion is from a book by Carl Jung called Synchronicity. And the concept is that it takes a surfeit of passion, which is an overabundance of passion, so that you're bursting with passion for something, and that's what it takes to create anything new.
Well, in looking at your art, it's clear that you have a surfeit of passion. Kathleen, it's been great talking to you. And, of course, we'll put the links on the show notes to where people can find your art. But thanks for being on the Fredcast.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
And last but certainly not least, one other cycling personality I had the pleasure of interviewing at this year's Interbike, and that is none other than Mr. Gary Fisher. Now, I really enjoyed doing this interview, partially because I had the opportunity before I turned the microphone on to talk to Gary about some business dealings that he and I had had way back when, like the late 80s, early 90s, when I first got into the bicycle industry. And it was just a pleasure talking to him and reliving our past and reliving the past of cycling back then and how it's progressed till now. I think you're going to get a lot out of this interview. And of course, the video version is at interbiketv.thefredcast.com. But I wanted to bring you the audio. I hope you enjoy it. Here's my interview with the one and only Gary Fisher. We're live from the show floor for Interbike TV, and we're with a cycling luminary. This is Gary Fisher. Gary, welcome.
Thank you so much. Here we are in Vegas one more time. Why do we come here? It's the bike freaks.
That may be true. And you, of course, remember when we used to go to Anaheim as well.
Oh, yeah. And I remember even Long Beach before that in Anaheim.
Yeah.
And those shows are so small. You could see every bike in like an hour. You could talk to everyone there in 3 hours. The industry was tiny.
Yeah.
And nowadays, you know, there's so many good people bringing new ideas to the table. And there's a bike for everyone now. You know, there are all kinds of bikes these days.
Yeah, you know, I was at the outdoor demo yesterday, and I was looking at cross bikes and single speeds and fixies and commuters and 29ers. I mean, there's everything.
Yeah, there's no one way that's best, you know. There's a way that's best for you, and there's a way that, you know, we can cure your cycling issue, your need, whatever that be.
So I got to ask, because you could really have your pick of anything. How many different bikes do you ride in, say, a two-week period?
I ride about six bikes, six favorites, you know, and it's like I've got a town bike that's an elegant old black bike. I've got a town bike that I call my sports car because it's a quick little bike to get around town, pretty skinny tires and everything. I've got a cargo bike to do all my shopping in town and bring the big stuff home. Then I've got a road bike, and then I've got a cross bike, and then I've got a hardtail mountain bike and a full squisher mountain bike. You know, and that's a pretty fundamental collection, you know.
Now, considering, say, the genesis of mountain biking and what bikes looked like then, and now we're looking at a lot of single-speed mountain bikes as well, what do you think of that trend?
Well, the single-speed, it's, you know, back to this classic thing of simplicity, and they're insanely cheap, you know, and it is a issue. You know, people, they wear out their geared bikes too quickly, you know, and I complain to our great suppliers and say, you know, you guys, you're just like looking at the example of a racer that has a mechanic. And will you please go pay attention to these guys that have abandoned their gearing and taken on a single speed and see if you can make things more robust. And I think that's a coming trend. You know, we have, you know, the types of bikes that are true rocket science. I mean, absolutely. I mean, I've shown some of our latest frame, you know, creations to a friend of mine that works at NASA, and he says, I don't think we make anything this nice here. And you think about it, you know, the bikes that are being made these days, they're made in a way of an object made by NASA or Formula One. And you cannot own those objects, but you can own a really cool bike. So we got that end of the thing where you've got this absolute specialty piece that you can prepare for the very, you know, an event, a single event, and prepare quite correctly. And the opposite end of that is a bike that will do just about anything you need to do, and it'll do it all the time, every day, day after day. And that becomes more like what our car is. You just put in the key and you go. I got to go somewhere. Grab my bike. Gone. You know, that whole style too. You know, and those things like I had a friend that owns a bike shop and he showed me this is pride and joy that he brought in, you know, had imported again from overseas. It was a tire pressure gauge. Now, what was the attraction? No batteries, right? Back to that simplistic part. On the other hand, you know, we got the ultimate battery bike now, and the things are going off in Europe like crazy, and this is the electric assist bikes. And those bikes are truly incredible, and that they're absolutely quiet, that you can pick one up and take it upstairs or lift it onto the rack, and the thing is a great equalizer. You get somebody out there that isn't quite as fast as you are, they get on that electric bike, and they're there. You get, like, a kid that, like, their parents, you know, they live at the top of a hill, you know, and everything. The kid has no excuses. It's freeing up mom. We've got politicians now that are riding these bikes. Like in San Francisco, many of the supervisors on the board of supervisors are riding electric assist bikes, and they are in love with them because they say, this is absolutely, bar none, the fastest way for me to get around town, and I don't show up a sweat ball when I have to arrive in my suit and tie. So we are offering solutions. And indeed, you know, this industry makes the world's most efficient vehicles.
Great point. And at Eurobike this year, and you were there in spades, we read your tweets nonstop from Eurobike. And one of the trends this year really was electric bikes. Yeah. And I'm wondering, as much as it seems to have caught on in Europe, when do you think it's really going to catch fire here?
I think people are, you know, they're gearing up like crazy. I mean, you know, you see guys like Stork making an electric bike. You see, like, I mean, we'll make, you know, 10 different models next year, you know, the Trek family and everything. And you see, you know, Ducati was out there with, you know, three versions. Ducati, you know, and they say, hey, don't take a photo. So I immediately Twittered it, you know.
But, you know, that brings up a good question. There's a lot of people who say an electric bike is really just an electric motorcycle, like an electric car. What do you say to that?
Well, there is quite a difference. It is not an electric motorcycle, and if you use an electric assist bike. And these are the bikes that, well, guess what? You still have to pedal. And these bikes now, they become absolutely silent as well, you know. So, I mean, I ride one around the city of San Francisco, and people are not aware I'm riding an electric bike very often. And, of course, they're capped out at around 20 miles an hour. But we as an industry are going to define it. And we need to, you know, that's one of the reasons I'm working with the politicians, is because, you know, I want them to really understand what they're legislating for or against. And, you know, we have to use some wisdom here. I mean, we can't have, you know, 35, 40 mile an hour bikes, so to speak, you know, speeding around on our bikeways. It's just not going to mix. So we have to look at what's going to be reasonable with these things and work with these things.
That's a great point. Now, on the other end of the spectrum, when we think about the racing side of things, what sorts of changes have you seen in racing? I remember 20 years ago when the men were incredibly well-followed, well-paid, the women not so much. Now we're seeing women's cycling magazines. What do you see as far as the changes in racing?
Well, there's some fundamental changes, but, you know, the women's side, that still has a long ways to go. I mean, there's been a tremendous amount of, well, inequity, so to speak, and, you know, the prize lists, you know, the salaries, all that sort of thing. Women are very interesting to watch riding a bike, and the and that whole genre has, you know, really come up, you know, and it's got a long ways to go. It's gone a lot, come a long ways, still got a long ways to go. But we're out supporting it. We've always sponsored women racers, and we always will.
Lastly, one of the things that I think you're known for is being a visionary. We've talked a little bit about some technology and about electric assist bikes. Look 10 years into the future. What does the bicycle of 2019 look like?
Well, the bike is extremely fashionable. You know, it looks cool. It's something that lasts a long time. And it's super light, and it just functions the way you want it. And I see electronics, more of a role of electronics. I see that because, you know, you just take, like, the fixie crowd, those kids, fixie kids. You know, one thing they do that I really appreciate, they appreciate the masters of, you know, of the old Japanese, the stuff that built, the guys that build the stuff for the Kirin racing. Stuff that, like, it's not the lightest, it's not the stiffest, but, man, it never breaks. And there's a whole group of young kids now in the United States and in Europe that, like, man, they worship that sort of metallurgy, so to speak. And, you know, and I think, you know, this country in particular, the United States, people do not appreciate a well-made piece. They just look at it and they take it for a surface value. Well, now their kids really understanding what goes into this product, what it takes to make it function and last a long time. Real appreciators that are going to, you know, going to make these companies, you know, those companies are back online again, you know, producing a lot of product. And, you know, it's really heartening to see people that do a good job are being, you know, being paid for it.
Gary Fisher, it's always good to talk to you. It's good to see you. Thank you for being a positive force in the world of cycling.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Well, I think it comes through how much I enjoyed interviewing Gary Fisher. His enthusiasm is truly infectious. Well, speaking of something I love, it is great to be back here with you on the Fredcast. We'll be back in just a few days. I've actually got a little vacation at the end of this week with my family, and then after that, back to a regular cycle of producing the Fredcast. In the meantime, if you'd like to contact me, please use our email. It's thefredcast@gmail.com. Or, of course, you can always check me out on Twitter. That's twitter.com/Fredcast. And that's where you're going to find out the latest updates on when we send out new videos for Interbike TV. And those are going to be coming fast and furious now. So go ahead and follow us on Twitter. Of course, you can also check out our website at www.thefredcast.com. And those Interbike TV videos are at interbiketv.thefredcast.com, or send us a voicemail, and that number is area code 435-258-6373, 435-258-6FRED. But coming up next, it is time for our Pod Safe Cycling music. Now, earlier last week, we had our first snow in the Wasatch Range of Utah up in Park City, and I thought I would play a song that is about the first snow of the year, and this is from William Saunders, and it's called Season's First Snow. Now, it is a bit of a slower version of Pod Safe Cycling music, so perhaps get ready for your cool down on today's ride. This is today's Pod Safe Cycling music from music.mevio.com. It is William Saunders and Season's First Snow. Links in the show notes to where you can find it, and of course, where you can also find our opening music, Happy by Jimmy Bratcher. That's going to do it for this week's show. Between this show and the next, enjoy the music. But most of all, enjoy the ride.